Welcome to Fandemic 2020, presented by Bet Online. I'm your host, Bram Weinstein. We have an amazing panel of guests today. You see Harold Reynolds, who played infield in Major League Baseball for a number of years. You can see him every day on the MLB Network these days in his prestigious broadcasting career. Eddie George won the Heisman Trophy back in the 1990s, one of the best running backs in Houston Oilers, Tennessee Titans history. And Robert Horry is one of the most clutch basketball players in NBA playoff history. A number of different championships with three different teams over 16 years. Hi to all of you. Thanks for joining us today.
Pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for having me also.
Before we get into the fans, because we're going to spend most of the hour talking about what their role has been in sports and whether they should be at games and what role they could play if they are there, let's just talk about the return and respectively to each of your sports. So the NBA is coming back, Robert, to a bubble in Florida. We've already had positive tests of players, namely Russell Westbrook, recently in recent days. What is your thoughts about the bubble and how the NBA is trying to return to play?
Well, first of all, I want to say I'm glad they're trying to return, and I hope it's a safe way. But I can never understand with the COVID-19 pandemic how you are able to start up. I want them to start up, but it's a contact sport. You know, and that's one of the ways you get COVID-19 through contact. And I played for 16 seasons, like you said. There's a lot of sweat. There's a lot of spit. There's a lot of things that body fluids that come out. So somehow these guys are going to get, in contact with people. And there's no reassurance that because, you know, from what I've seen and what I heard, like, you know, being asymptomatic, you cannot have a temperature. You cannot have this. And then all of a sudden, someone gets it. So it's, to me, it's going to be difficult. And I know those guys love the game. They're going to play at their own risk, but I just hope, you know, everybody can stay safe and nobody can get sick and that the sport can continue.
Harold, let's talk about baseball for a minute. They're not doing the bubble. What is your sense of how they are trying to come back and get back on the field of play?
Well, I mean, I totally understand what Robert's saying. And, a lot of times you don't think about basketball being a contact sport, but they are. And the same thing with baseball. I mean, just conversation. When Robert was talking about spitting, think about baseball. I mean, that's what the game is about, people spitting all over the place. But as far as coming back in the cities, you know, we're in this ever-evolving thing. When baseball first initially talked about coming back, they had a similar plan like the NBA, maybe not a bubble in Orlando, but Arizona and Florida. Those are going to be the spots that they tried to be at. As the virus spiked and things changed, they ended up bringing teams that were working out on their own back to their home cities, and now we evolved into everybody's going to play at home. It's going to be forever evolving, trying to get through the 60-game schedule and then into the postseason. So the challenge is the virus. I mean, we just don't know enough about it. It seems like we're learning weekly, daily, how things change. At first, we start off in February thinking you can't even touch the countertop, or you might get it, you know, and now it's evolved to everybody's wearing masks around the country. So I think the more we learn, the more adjustments that are going to happen along the way and have to happen. So if someone were to tell me that baseball ended up playing in two different cities and they tried to figure it out, I wouldn't be shocked. If someone said, we made it through by the skin of our teeth, I think that's probably, if we do make it through, that will be what happens. So every day is a challenge, no doubt about it.
And for Eddie, for the NFL and for college football, for that matter, it's very complicated. There's no union for the college football players. That's a complicated issue in its own right. But for the NFL, it feels like they're waiting to see what happens with these other leagues before they really determine what their plan is. What is your sense as they get set to open training camps?
Their sense is like my sense. I have no sense about this whole situation. Like Harold mentioned, I mean, our sport is contact. You know, guys are going to hit on each other, sweat on each other, do all that stuff. And guys are going to come up with positive testing. That's the reality of it. The question is, you know, if you're asymptomatic, you know, what are the long-term effects? A year from now, 2 years from now, we're approaching the flu season in the fall. All of that plays a factor into whether the NFL ramps up or not. And much like Major League Baseball and basketball, we're following suit, seeing how this thing plays out. The fact that the cases are trending up is not a good sign. We've already seen the NFL cancel the Hall of Fame event. They have canceled the Hall of Fame game. They've canceled two preseason games, possibly all of preseason. So this is a very fluid situation for the NFL, and I'm pretty sure they're not going to unfold or talk about a contingency plan. They're still pushing forward, hoping that they're going to be full stadiums, hoping that there's going to be a full slate of games. But I'm pretty sure they're adjusting to say, okay, how are we going to play this out when September rolls around and cases have kind of flattened out? But how can we keep our fans safe, our coaches safe, and certainly our players safe on a day-to-day basis? Testing is going to be very important to test guys on a daily basis. So like Harold mentioned, you know, we don't know a lot about COVID-19. We don't know the long-term effects of it. We were hoping that this thing would kind of subside because of the heat of the summer. Well, guess not. Guess what? It hasn't. And so we're here now. And I think if the NBA continues to move forward, play games, and everything's safe, and ML baseball also plays their games, I think the NFL will follow suit, making adjustments as they go.
Robert, would you have played if you were still playing right now? Would you play?
I probably wouldn't have, because it also depends on where I am at my career. You know, if I'm like 5 years in, 10 years in, or like if it was like 16 years at the end of my career, I wouldn't do it just because I know I'm older. I know my wife had heart issues and I got a young kid at home. So I probably wouldn't play. And plus, I've made enough money that I didn't have to play. So it that makes a big difference on where you are. My career was established. So, you know, it's hard to say, you know, and plus I had 7 championships. So I'm not trying to win another one, you know. But, and it's hard to say, man, because you love the game of basketball. You love your sport. And you want to get out there and show your craft and do your craft at the best of its ability. And it would be one of those things, and you have to really sit down with your family and discuss it and see what they want you to do. And it would be hard. But for me, and I know me and my wife, I would have said, no, I'm not playing, because, I played enough. And my life and my family life is more important than getting some, playing a basketball game.
You know, your
pre-family decision, though. Robert know good and well he's sitting out there with 3-point land, nobody near him, just drilling.
Exactly.
Eddie, you know that. Eddie, you know he was out there.
7 rings? Are you kidding me? Hey, Robert, you the GOAT, man. Forget about him, man. Rings, bro.
Hey,
come on. That's crazy.
It's hard to make this. It's easy to make decisions like that when you already won your championships. You're not fighting for a championship. You sit back like, man, I got some of those. You know, I can just chill.
I got 7 rings.
7 rings.
Harold, would you play? Would you have played?
Would I have played? Yeah, I probably would have. You know, I was single throughout most of my career. I mean, through all my career, I was single. I didn't get married until after baseball. So, yeah, I probably would have played. I can understand guys that have the challenges, though, because of the fact that, well, you look at Mike Trout. You know, his wife is expecting their first child in August. And I remember being in spring training before the shutdown, talking to Mike, and he was so ecstatic about being home and asking me, what was it like in the delivery room when your kids were born? And he was all enthusiastic about all that. That's something you think about forever, particularly with the first one. And so now, knowing that the date was going to be in August, he was like, I'll probably miss a couple games, but I'll be back. Then the pandemic hits, and he's thrown into this whole decision of what is he going to do? And I'll throw this at you guys real quick. The challenge for these players is not taking care of yourself. It's all your teammates. Everybody's in it. So I don't know what they're doing when they leave and who they're around and everything else. I think that's what presents even more of a challenge with contact testing, where if someone all of a sudden outside of your sphere has had contact with somebody, now you all of a sudden you got to get quarantined. And so those are the challenges. And I know that's what Mike Trout is really struggling with. So that said, and that long answer, being single, with no kids all through my career, yeah, I'd probably play. But had I had family, like Robert was talking about, it presents a different challenge.
How about the viability of a championship? Robert, I'll get Eddie's thoughts on this in a moment. But, you know, your history and your career was you played on very good teams that had a chance. Here in Washington, where I am, Bradley Beal is not going to return for the Wizards, but they don't really have a viable chance of winning a championship this year. And they're using a rotator cuff as an excuse for it. But I think we all know that there's a lot more to it, to that decision. if you were on one of the teams that had a chance to make a championship, would you feel different pressure to come back and play to try to finish it?
Well, as an athlete, you always feel pressure to play because you want to perform not just for yourself, but for your teammates and for the fans. And since there's going to be no fans in the stands, more so for your teammates. And you would have to really sit down with the leaders of the team and discuss it with them. You know, for instance, if I was on the team with, you know, Clyde and Dream, and they haven't won a championship yet, and they're trying to win one, I'm saying, yo, dude, you know, this is what's going on in my life. This is what, you know, what do you want me to do? You know, are you want me to play basketball? Do you want me to look out for my family? It's an array of things that can hit you. So, I you know, being a young guy, a middle-aged guy, an old guy considering the league, I would really, you know, have to sit down and think about it, you know. And if I hadn't won a championship, I definitely probably would play. But other than that, I wouldn't want to play because at the end of the day, all you have is your life. You know, you have the, you know, you have your family, and that would weigh heavily on me, you know, especially when, like me, I lost a daughter due to health issues, and I wouldn't want to put anybody else in my family into that position. So, I mean, you know, my heart would be heavy, and it would weigh a lot on which way, what I should do. But that's why I said at the end of the day, you would have to sit down with your family and discuss it because they're more important than the game and then what else is, whatever, everything else that's going on.
I think the point that Robert's bringing up about health, everybody reacts different to COVID-19. We don't, there is not one, this is how everybody reacts to it. And you just don't know. It's the unknown of maybe I get a lot sicker than maybe Robert Horry does, or even Eddie George, whoever it might be. You just don't know how your body's going to react to it. So that too, I think a lot of times when it comes to fans and a lot of stuff I hear, and even players, is most people think everybody's going to, oh, well, he'll be back in 7 days, or he gets tested a couple times and it's negative, he'll be back at it. And that's the misnomer with this whole COVID-19, is that everybody's affected differently.
All right, let's bring Eddie George into the conversation. Eddie, if you were still playing, would you play?
Ooh, that's a tough question. Considering that I don't have any rings, I'm tempted to play, but I had to think about the long term because, you know, I have awards. I've won a few things, and they collect dust. And the most important thing, the valuable thing in my life, is my health, my family, and I have to consider them. You know, I may be okay, but I don't know how this virus may affect my children or my wife or my grandmother or my mom. So I can't be selfish to the point where, you know, I don't have an accomplished a feat in football where I can get a Super Bowl ring in sake of my health and the health of others. So I probably wouldn't play. I have to really think about that, the long-term effects, how it affects my family moving forward, and understand that, you know, even if I won a championship during these times, you're going to have the asterisk by it anyway. You know, nobody's going to say, you won, okay, a Super Bowl playing scrimmage games with no fans. It's nothing. It's not the real element. It's not the real deal. So it's just one of those times where you just got to fight through it, I think, for athletes. But I wouldn't have played right now.
All right, let's switch over to fans, and let's talk about what that looks like, what that feels like. Eddie, you played at Ohio State. So you played at one of the most iconic, legendary venues that there is in American sport. Played in the NFL as well. So let's start with you here. The idea of playing football games without fans, that feels like what to you?
Extremely weird. In fact, I did. I played at Ohio State, like you mentioned, 100,000 fans every single week, rain, sleet or snow, hail, hurricane, tornado, they're there. But I also played in Houston in 1996 when we didn't have any fans. So I understand that. You know, there were only 16,000 fans on average at our games. And sometimes it was just the people working concessions. So it's a very
weird. I was there, Eddie.
you were in the stands.
Sure. Yeah, I was there.
So you know the environment. So I know what it feels like, and it's not fun. It's you need the energy to feed off of. Your whether your home or your home venue, you need the fans to support you when you're down. You're trying to figure out how to force through adversity as a team, and you need the fan support. And also when you're on the road, you know the opposing teams feed off of that same type of energy. So the fans are very much a part of sports like anything else. They play a role in it, And that's the whole point, is the give and take. That's why they have home field advantage or home court advantage or home field advantage. It's definitely a feel to it. So what you're going to see is it's going to feel like a spring practice, if you will. It's going to feel like a glorified scrimmage. It's not going to have very much meaning without the fans. It's going to be a different feel.
Robert, for you, I mean, for your league, they're going right into the playoffs and there's no fans. What was your experience like having fans in the stands for playoff games? And what does it mean to you to not have them in what is the biggest moments of the season for the NBA?
Well, for me, I fed on fans' energy. And I also love going into different, like the visiting team's arena and shutting them up, because it was nothing more satisfying than shutting them up and, you know, having that thrill. But I think sometimes people don't understand how much as athletes we need fans. We love fans and we appreciate them greatly. I know a lot of times we can act like we don't by not signing an autograph, but we really appreciate fans because they give us that energy in the fourth quarter and they let us and they excite us to get over that mountaintop. I think about when we played Portland in game 7 of Western Conference Finals and game 7 in the fourth quarter. You know, we down 20 points, but we got those fans behind us to come through and make them nervous. You know, that helped us. That's why you play for home court advantages, for these moments like this, when you need those fans behind you to get you over the top. So it's hard to play without fans, because my first NBA game was played in Japan and they didn't know who to root for. They was just there to watch. The stadium was packed, but it was quiet. You know, they didn't know who to root for until the second half. They started rooting for the team that was down. And so it's weird to play without, you know, people in the stands. It's almost like when you go play like at like a gym, you got people still watching you. And so you got the people going to ooh and ah that make you want to play a little bit harder, but it's going to be very difficult. But I will say this, without fans, you're going to see who is the best. You're going to see who has the heart and the mindset to get over the top, because they don't have the fans to push them or give them that extra mile. So now the true talented people are going to come through at the end.
Harold, do you agree with that? The cream is going to rise to the top here without fans pushing the momentum one way or the other?
Yeah, I do. I definitely agree with that. A couple of thoughts I had while both he and Eddie were talking. It's not only the fans, their energy, but also that heckler. You know, it stands out a little bit more when there's nobody there. But in our case in baseball, what they're doing, because we're carrying such big rosters, there's 60-man rosters, you know, 40-man roster and a 20-man taxi squad. So when they start playing games, you're going to have those players sitting in the stands. And they're taking notes and they're talking to each other. And you're going to be able to hear them, which would be really weird, you know. Or in the case of sitting in a dugout, you go back and you're sharing information. You don't have a slider today, man. Fastball's not as strong. The pitcher can hear you now because the stadium just echoes. Wow. And so all these little things, I think, are going to be interesting nuances of what's going to happen now that there's nobody in the stands. I was listening to that soccer game, and, you know, I watch soccer when it's like big moments, like, you know, the World Cup or something like that. I'm not a huge soccer fan, but I like it. But I'm watching one of these, the comeback thing that they're doing now, and I can hear all the players talking communications, you know, cut back, get over here. You never hear that any other time. So I thought that was kind of cool.
I got to tell you though, I mean, Harold, I mean, as a fan, that is one of the unintended good consequences here of all of this. That we get to hear the things that we've always wanted to hear that we weren't sure was ever really going on.
Do you really want to hear that though?
Well,
because at basketball games, there's a lot of things that's been said that you can't have on TV.
Hey, Eddie, I'm curious with in football, so much of the vocabulary is shared from team to team.
Yeah.
Like your audible in plays and stuff like that. How will that play?
That's a great point, because, you know, the Patriots, they got in trouble for getting their audibles, they're getting their signals, they're knowing when they're checking, they're getting. So that's going to be interesting because to have the crowd noise to mute that out helps, and you can't pick up on things. But when you can pick up, like, you know, check with me, you know, going right, you know, Wrangler and and lefty, whatever it is. I mean, you can pick up on those things. So I think the NFL, in terms of game planning, week to week, they're going to have to change up their vocabulary to communicate what they want from play to play. And it's going to be interesting to see how that happens.
Harold, I want to go back to tension of the game for a moment. I mean, there may be nothing more tense than a playoff baseball game, late innings, where there's every pitch really matters and series is on the line. Without fans in the stands, and I know we're getting ahead of it because we're still a couple months away from something like that happening, does the dynamic of the pressure on the players change if no one is there in attendance watching it?
Well, that's a great question. Yeah, you know, the interesting thing, I don't know, maybe my mindset's different because I played in Seattle when we didn't have a lot of fans. So it was more about the TV audience that was watching. And I just remember, like, we're playing against New York or somebody like that. I knew there was going to be a huge audience, or a playoff game, or an all-star game, or anything like that. You know you're going to have a big TV viewing audience. So I think that's where a lot of the pressure comes from, more so than the moment, so to speak. I think the moment would kind of be natural, but it's the mind starts thinking about, man, I missed this ball. A billion people watched it, you know? And that's kind of where my mind would go to at different times. So maybe guys will go to that. I don't know.
Eddie, did you feel it? Could you feel the momentum? Did you feed off of it as well when you played?
Oh, absolutely. And and you know, Rob was talking about those big moments, you know, being on the road, especially like in the black hole, you know, in a playoff game, AFC championship game, you can hear the crowd making a big difference in terms of hearing at the line of scrimmage, especially when you're back up in your own into the field and they're on top of you. It makes a big difference. And certainly, you know, when we were at home, you know, earlier on when we became the Titans, we had a huge home field advantage. We didn't lose a home game for 3 years in our stadium because our fans were so loud and teams hated to come in there because they knew what they were going to come up against. It was a hornet's nest. So, and I remember playing in college, going to Penn State, you know, having to walk through that tunnel out in Happy Valley and the fans throwing batteries and bottles filled with urine. And those are the things that create memories. It just really
urine
moment. Yes, urine, bro. But that's what makes it great. That's the beauty of playing sports, is that the fans are very much a part of the whole story of the whole play. And without that, there's definitely an element that's missed. You have to lock in a lot better, but in terms of focus, but for the most part, the fans really make sports go.
I bet you never thought you'd be nostalgic for people throwing urine at you, but
here
we are in 2020.
It was the same thing. Listen, we played up there in 1992. It was 3-4. The week before that, they played Michigan, and that's when the fans rushed the field and a couple of the students passed away. So they changed up the whole environment. We still came out of the student section, but there was a cage right over top of the opposing team's locker room, and they put a tarp over. So I'm a young sophomore, you know, just excited to be on the road. I wasn't starting at this time. And right at the top of the tunnel, it's all dark, and it's going on to the field. And they're hammering on the cage. It sounds like thunder. We come out and raining of booze, tomatoes, marshmallows with pennies in it, bottles of piss coming out of the sky. It was just awesome, man. And it was a cold day in Wisconsin. Oh my God, that right there was a great, great memory. Wind up tying that game 14-14, but that's what I'm saying. You know, without that, if you come out to a stadium with nothing but silence, it changes the whole feeling, the whole environment of the experiment.
The NBA is not gonna have fans in because they did the bubble thing. Baseball and football, I guess, could, you know, have a percentage of people come in at some point. But Robert, with the NBA, the fans are closer to you all than in any of those other sports. Do you have any experiences that you could share with fans that were in the courtside or locally near you that either helped or hurt your team as you went along?
Well, I remember, I think one of the most memorable moments for me is we were playing Utah, and I dove for a ball. And as you dive and you look up and you see an elderly lady, you're like, oh, no. And you try to twerk your body so you won't hit them. And I remember hitting this lady, and I felt so bad. And she was like so excited that I landed on her, right? And she was like, "Baby, I'm such a big fan of yours. Don't worry about it. I'm fine." And it come out, her name was Mary Wells. I still remember her name. And I remember, you know, after that, before every game, I would go over and speak to her and ask her how she was doing and talk to her. And so the summer came, and all of a sudden, I come home and I get a big package on my doorstep. And I'm like, I thought something, Nike had sent me something, right? No, I open it, and it's all this Disney stuff. And I look, and it was from her. Apparently, she was the wife of some Disney exec, and she had sent me a bunch of stuff for my kids, and it was crazy. Wow. I had so much Disney stuff that I was giving away to everybody's kids and still had more left over. And an experience like that, you know, I know you guys probably don't get a chance to do that, but you get to meet, in basketball, you get to meet your fans, you get to know people like that. You know, I had, another funny story is Halle Berry came to a game.
Oh.
And the ball went out of bounds by her. And I'm the designated guy supposed to take the ball out, right? I think every guy on the team was over there trying to take the ball out. Like, yo, man, I got it. I got to no, dog, move, move. I'm supposed to take the ball out. So it's things like that that stick in your mind, and that's one of the great things about basketball. You do have instances like that where you get to meet these fans. You get to know them. You have a personal relationship with them. And then also you have the bad stuff that happened when, you know, with the fans going, you know, a little too far and, you know, the malice in the palace and other things like that. But I hate to say this, guys, but I enjoy our fans being up close and personal more than, you know, I play baseball.
If you got Halle Berry in the audience,
But it's definitely like having those fans right there where you can speak to them and touch them, you know. So it's you need those fans, and I love having them there. And those two stories always, you know, stick in my mind because they were great moments. I never had any bad moments, but, you know, the only fantastic moments.
I mean, there's a lot of interaction with fans with baseball, specifically before games. You'll see a lot with batting practice and players going over behind the dugout or whatever it may be. What were your experiences with fans through your playing career?
No, it was a lot during batting practice, you know, being able to have people show up early and talk. But as Robert was telling this story, it just brought me back to the beauty of baseball is we stop down like a pitching change or something like that. And you may interact with fans, or they might try to interact with you. So I'm on the on-deck circle in Oakland. I'm playing with the Orioles at the time, and Cal Ripken would hit after me, and I'd hit before Cal. So pitching change, and we're standing in the on-deck circle, and some guy has been yelling at Cal the whole time, and it's been drowned out, but now the game stopped, and you can hear him, and he's going, "Ripken! Ripken!" I think Cal was struggling at the time. I think he's hitting like 250. He goes, 250? Lou Gehrig hit 280, and he was dying. And Cal just turned around and tipped his cap and goes, "Best line all year. Best line all year." And the guy just became like a folk hero in Oakland. Like, "Oh, man, you got Cal to talk to you." But that's the interaction of baseball. A lot of it is from the on-deck circle. People wanting to talk with you and things like that. And they dream up and think about, what am I going to say when my opportunity comes? Unlike your sports, they may not know when you're going to be near them. They know when we're coming to the on-deck circle. And so they kind of get their little routines and the things they want to talk about you or to you at that time.
Eddie, do you think you'd be able to adapt? If you did play, do you think you'd be able to adapt quickly to games without fans in the stands?
I've done it again. You know, when our first couple of years in Nashville, we couldn't give away a ticket to our games. We played in Memphis in 1997. Again, you know, no one came to our games except the Pittsburgh Steelers fans when we played them in town. They packed the house. But outside of that, you know, we used that to our advantage. We felt like, you know, we didn't have fans in the stands. Teams would come in a little shell shocked. They couldn't feed off the energy, and we would take advantage of that. But for the most part, I played in those environments. It's not very fun because you can come in there. You need a boost of energy. You got to feel the energy of the crowd. You got to feel the energy, the magnitude of the game, the moment, and so forth. So I could get it done, but I'd rather have the fans in the stands. I need that.
Can I jump in real quick? I think baseball is built for this more than any of the other sports. You think about it. How many high school baseball games did you guys go to that had more than 100 people at? You know, we grew up not playing in front of fans in high school, in college, through the minor leagues. I remember minor leagues, our high attendance was 2,000 one summer, you know, and then you get to the big leagues and you get boom. But for the most part, you spent most of your career hoping that your mom or dad or some cousins might have came to the game so you'd have some people there. And that's different. You guys didn't have that, I don't think, in your environments. Even high school football, you know, everybody was going to that. High school basketball game on a Friday. Imagine going to see Robert Horry pack the gym. You know, so those are different things than what we grew up on in baseball. So I think if anybody can adjust, the baseball players should be able to adjust to no fans.
Can the basketball players do it, Robert? You think they can do it?
I think they can do it because so many of us practice in the gym by ourselves. So many of us do a lot of things in the gym by ourselves. And I think with you going out and playing against other guys that you just don't like or just want to beat or just want to have the bragging rights, you're going to come out and you're going to perform. And it's going to be a little tough when you're down 15 or down 10 points to muster up that extra energy. But I think for the most part, you know, every athlete is competitive. I don't think there's a person out there that wants to lose. So you're going to go out there and you're going to try to do your best and try to overcome the adversity that you're coming up against. So I think some way some guys will figure it out. And I think some guys are going to like it better because now you can hear them talking trash to one another. You can really know the guy. Because, you know, most of the trash talking to basketball comes from that bum that's on the end of the bench, you know. And so you can talk trash. You can get it out. And you're going to, like I said earlier, you're going to see who's really the best. Like you said, the cream of the crop is going to come to the top and you're going to see who is the best, even though it's like Eddie said earlier, it's still going to have an asterisk on the side of that, but you still want to go out there, compete and show you who's best.
Who's the trash talker in football then? Is it the receivers and corners, Eddie? Is that who the trash talkers are in football?
Well, when I played, you know, I don't know how they do it now. It seems to be a nice guy league where they're trading jerseys on the field. They're hugging each other and they're, you know, helping each other up in the pile, and they don't want to hit you too hard. They're laying quarterbacks down gently and all that stuff. But when I played, John Randall was the trash talker. He was such a student of his craft in terms of trash talking. He would do his homework in terms of your background, your mom's name, your father's name, your sister's name, your dog, if you took ballet lessons, all of that. And he would have just moments in time that he would talk to you throughout the game. Just little snippets of there. So we played them in 1998 in Nashville, ironically, the last game of the year on the Christmas Day. And it was a snowstorm. We didn't play at all. We didn't practice at all that week. So we get to the game and we're playing. We're not going anywhere. Minnesota has the best record in the league that year. And I get the ball. He tackles me. He says, "Oh, Eddie, Donna wouldn't like you running like that today. You're running like a little elf." I mean, so he calls my mom Donna, which is Donna George, and he says, "You're running soft today." And he says, "I know you don't feel like playing today, Edward." I mean, just Edward Nathan George Jr. That he says that in the entirety. So, you know, you'll hear those types of things. So when I played, it was a defensive lineman. It was the linebackers. It was Ray Lewis. It was those guys that were always talking trash. But nowadays, I think, you know, the defensive backs, the receivers, you want to hear a lot out of them.
Harold, who is it in base? Are we going to hear what, catchers and hitters? Like, where's the trash talk coming from in baseball?
Well, I guess it's not trash talk in a sense in talking to the umpire. You know, where's that pitch? Come on, man. That ain't right. That's not there. You know, you'll hear a lot of that. But similar to Eddie, when I was playing, it was the guys trying to take you out of second base. They'd be on first, like, that rule's not there anymore. They can't hit anybody. But Kirk Gibson, he'd be like, "I'm coming after you." You know, I'd see Bo over there, and I'd be like, "Bo, this is not football." You know? But you just have to let guys know. I got into such a trash-talking thing with Chili Davis. He took me out one time, and I looked for him for 7 years. Every time he was on first, I was like, "Get the ball to me quick now," to all my other infielders. "Get it to me quick, because I'm going to drill him. I'm going to sit him down. I'm going to hit him." And he tried to take me out a couple times after that, and I'd jump over him and go, "You can't hit me." He'd be jogging back, "You can't hit me, Chili. You can't hit me." You know, so it just is natural nature of seeing who that personality, I think, more so in baseball than anything else.
Hey, Harold, there was a street talk about Bo. I had a chance to play in his golf tournament a few times.
Oh, Lord.
He shares a story when he played when he's playing baseball, and he said something about he looked forward to seeing the catcher wait for him down the third base. He says, if he squats, he says, open season on his ass. And I'm like, oh, my God. Bo Jackson, no pads on, coming straight down the gut. Oh, man.
If you guys can Google this, look up Bo Jackson hitting Rick Dempsey. Rick Dempsey is a catcher in Baltimore, and Bo knocked him from the plate to the on-deck circle and just got up and walked away like it was no big deal. And I kid you not, every time he got on first base after that, I was like, Bo, this is not football. I was serious. Because Bo would come in like a freight train trying to kill you.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Hey, let's shift back into the sports here for a moment and get your thoughts on the perspective of all the different leagues and how they've handled this. Eddie, let's start with you. Roger Goodell, the NFL, how do you think so far, and I don't think we know the answer to this yet because they haven't started yet, how do you think the NFL has handled all the issues in and around fans and the pandemic?
Well, again, I think he's handled it as best he can because, again, you know, there's a lot of unknowns. I think that they've handled a lot of the events leading up to the COVID-19 deal better, you know, in terms of the NFL draft. They did it remotely. They did an exceptional job of creating a whole experience for fans. Exceptional job there. And I think he's watching how other leagues handle these situations, and they're mapping this plan out. I know, and I believe that he's saying, hey, you know, the preseason is going to be a scrap, and we're going to jump right into the season. So I think he has plans. He has A and B, C plans that he's going to handle because the bottom line is this. The NFL generates – it's a billion-dollar business, and they can't afford not to have a season. So he's going to figure out a way, whether it's stadiums half full or, you know, 30,000 fan limit with X amount of seats that are tarped off, really play it that way and making sure that they're using technology now for fans that come in. If they have been exposed to someone that had COVID, it'll beep. And I mean, all these different things, I think he's leading up into it, but I think it remains to be seen, you know, when September rolls around, if we have an NFL season, how they handle it in terms of the job that he's done.
Robert, Adam Silver in the NBA, how do you think they've handled the pandemic and trying to come back to play?
Well, I think Adam right now is being looked at by all the commissioners to see how he's going to handle it. And so far, I think he's trying to do his best by putting everybody in a bubble and having all these guys tested and making sure they stay within that bubble. You know, you saw recently where a couple of guys kind of just took two steps outside the bubble and now they quarantine again. And I think that's going to be the deciding factor. If when they play a couple of games and what happens after that, you know, if everybody's still, you know, COVID free or a couple of guys, you know, have it, what is going to be your reaction to that? Is he going to shut the whole league down? Is he going to remove those players? Because, you know, I never agree with Charles Barkley because he went to Auburn and I went to Alabama, but I think he kind of had it right. You know, he said, how is that going to, what's going to happen after someone tests positive? You know, you took, like when it happened during the season, they, you know, they quarantined both teams. And everybody is inside this bubble. Do you quarantine those teams? Do you quarantine a player? Because they said they're going to quarantine a player. But that player has been touching people. That player has been interacting with other people. What do you do? And it's just hard to say. And I think right now he is the poster boy for all sports because he's trying to get back sooner than later. And it's difficult. I wouldn't want to be him. I wouldn't be any commissioner because, like George said, this is a billion-dollar business. And especially with the NBA losing so much money from what happened with China and the season not having an ending, it's a lot of money at stake. It's a lot of people want to, you know, see what's going to happen. So right now we're the test dummies, and we're going to see what happens. And hopefully nobody will get sick and everybody stays safe and the league can continue. But I think Adam is doing a great job. He's doing what he can do. That's all he can do is what he can do.
I'm very interested to hear what Harold has to say about Rob Manfred because their negotiation just to get them back to playing got very public and very ugly, and it was about money. What is your sense of how baseball has handled their attempt to return?
Yeah, I mean, the negotiation was ugly. I don't think anybody ever wants that public. And so it kind of, in a sense, set us back. But it is kind of forgiving once you see players out on the field. And the challenge, it's daily, guys, every day. All the points that Robert brought up and Eddie with the testing and what happens if somebody tests positive. Baseball's had so many protocols in place with all their different things. It's tough. So I think Rob Manfred is like all the commissioners out there holding his breath, hoping they make it through. And, you know, hoping we can get this thing going. We're about a week away or so from starting the season. And once the season gets started, guys start traveling and the dynamic changes, you know, and now you're out of that bubble. So they're going to have to make an adjustment again. I don't think there's one plan that's going to be the plan that sticks all the way through. I can go all the way back to the negotiations. I don't think they expected a negotiation in March to have to change how things were viewed in July and think it would take this long to get on the field. And that said, looking at the plans, you know, this is probably plan 15 that we're on right now or 20.
Yeah.
Just to get them to where they're practicing. I mean, you're going through things like guys are working out in groups of five. If the ball's used and touches four or five different people, that ball's thrown away. You know, a coach has his own name on a ball. He throws batting practice. The hitter hits him. That coach picks him up. I mean, they're trying everything. And now that changes a couple days later when we got to integrate the whole team. We're going to play a scrimmage. Oh, no. And then all these things have to adjust, and he's got to look at it and figure it out. I'll just use this last example. Gerrit Cole pitches in an inter-squad game against the Yankees the other day. And he strikes out a batter. They throw the ball around. He gets it back. And the umpire says, you can't use that ball no more. Four guys touched it. Throw the ball out. He gets the ball back. Next pitch, Andujar hits a home run. He goes, I like the ball you threw out of the game. You know, so
don't throw it around.
They're calling the commissioner like, hey, man, you can't be throwing the ball out if I strike somebody. I mean, this is, imagine all the things that land on their desks that we have no idea is going on. So all the commissioners, they are adjusting every day. What we see today will not be the same tomorrow. I guarantee you on that.
Look, for the NBA, they're in a bubble, so there's not going to be any fans there. For the other two sports, it's a wild west. It depends on jurisdiction. You know, like Larry Hogan, where I am in Maryland, has been very conservative about not bringing people back and opening things up. So I don't know if people will be at Orioles games. But if you go to Florida, it sounds like Rays games might be open for business, or in Texas, and they may have 50% capacity at the Cowboys Stadium. From a health perspective, and I'll start with you, Harold, from a health perspective, we've established you guys to some level would miss the fans and their presence, but what concern do you have about people being in the stands in general?
Well, I think if you want to get through the season, it's going to have to be without fans. Because you can't risk a fan coming down shaking somebody's hand. Your natural reaction, somebody says hi to you, you want to reach out your hand, right? Fist pump, whatever. What happens if a player contacts COVID through a fan? You're going to contact all the fans, and you're going to shut the team down? I just think it's difficult enough to keep the team clean and healthy and not to involve fans. And I know that's not what everybody wants to hear, but I think that's where we're at right now. And like I said, this is ever evolving. Who knows? By the time we get to September, it might totally be different. But I think for now, as we're starting up and trying to just get players on the field, I find it difficult to think they're not going to interact with fans. It's just a natural thing to do. So I think that complicates the problem. That's just my thought.
Eddie, what about you? You said you fed off the fans. You liked having them there. With the public health and your personal health, if you were playing at risk, how do you feel about the idea of fans being in the stands?
I think it can be done. I think if you can find the right capacity and you can begin to kind of tarp off different sections of the stadium, because not every, even in normal time, not every stadium is going to be full anyway. So it's only certain markets, certain places. And I think teams that are at full capacity on the average need to have those plans out. I think if fans come in with masks on, they provide hand sanitizers, they're laid out a certain protocol that there are no player-fan interactions, there are no autographs, lay all the rules out on the table, I think it can be done appropriately. I think if you can somehow manage the concessions, you know, 6 feet distance, making sure people go in one way all the time, that they're not all over the place. If you can provide that in terms of a stadium environment and that experience, it can be done. I don't think the players can necessarily attract COVID. I'm not an expert. I'm not a doctor. Through fan interaction, just by them being there, it's more on the field that from other players they can get it. But in terms of having fans in the stands, it can be done if it's done appropriately, responsibly, and it has to be well thought out. And they have to check, be able to check the temperatures of people, do a testing and a screening prior to that. I think it can be done.
As for the NBA, I mean, this all started, the shutdown, at least for pro sports, started with Rudy Gobert coming down with a positive test, and they shut down the stadium in Oklahoma City immediately and sent everybody home. I know we're months away from that. That feels like eons ago, but if the NBA was open to having fans back, Robert, would you have been comfortable with them being there while you were playing?
To be honest, no, because you got to think, there's so many exciting moments that happen in basketball constantly, and people get excited. They want to high five people next to them. They want to hug and they want to do things of that nature. So, and plus, you know, these arenas are tight because they want to put more seats in the building. I know even if I go to a game now, I can't even sit in a seat because they're so tight. And so you want to say 6 feet apart, these seats are not 6 feet apart. And people are going to interact. They're going to come through certain doors. You know, you can say funnel in one door and out the door, but think about it. Every one of us has been through a game. When the game ends, we're trying to get out of there, right? We're in a rush. We're bumping into people. We're trying to enter, you know, trying to get out. So I don't think you can do it with fans right now because there's so many moments that happen from coming into the building to exiting the building to exciting moments to whatever it may be that fans are going to interact with one another and touch one another. So I would vote for no fans right now. Play basketball. You know, you've been playing it since you were 3 years old and didn't have an audience. You don't need one now. Play basketball, enjoy the sport, enjoy the competition because fans can watch it at home. It's better at home anyway. You get to see replay.
You know, it's funny. Like we've heard a lot about the word essential, which typically is used for doctors and teachers and people who are driving ambulances and the things that are literally essential. But it does feel like on some level that athletes are being told, especially in the leagues that you played in, that you are essential even if the others can't attend. Do you get a sense that there is a pressure on the players to perform even without fans because it is essential on some level? I'll start with you, Harold.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I think especially with baseball, we have such a reputation of being America's pastime. You can argue that however you want because you're looking at the numbers. But I look back at 9/11 and the healing that baseball kind of brought about with Mike Piazza's home run and the battle and the run through that and the Yankees in the playoffs and World Series. Sports has a place in our country of healing and being able to get people's minds off of things. I would love to be able to watch a basketball game or a football game or something takes you away from the everyday, turn on a TV and all I hear about is coronavirus. You know, so I think baseball, yes, there's pressure, or sports in general, there's pressure for the players to entertain because that's what you do. You're entertaining at the end of the day. And yeah, I think there's a lot of pressure on players to perform.
Eddie, you were one of the stars of the NFL at the time. Would you have felt pressure to perform amid the circumstances?
Absolutely. You know, Harold, you mentioned 9/11. I was playing, I think, Robert, we were all playing at that particular time in 2001. And we made the decision that week as a union not to play in honor of what's happened. But the following weekend, we felt like we had to go out and perform for the healing of the United States, for everyone, because it was such a difficult time in history. We felt like we needed to go and do that. So yes, as a player, I felt like I had to go out there and do my part to bring healing to it. And it would be a shame if we didn't have football this season, because everybody's looking forward to college football, pro football, because it gets you away from the game. Listen, when happy hour comes on Friday, you're looking forward to college football next day, game day that morning. You're looking at all the games that weekend. You look at the slate of football games on Sunday, then Monday. So we look forward to that, to break away all that's going on in society right now. We definitely need sports in our lives just to to build back the morale of our country.
You know, I felt, Robert, for a long time, like all it's going to take is someone like LeBron James or Kawhi Leonard or Giannis or the stars of the league right now to say, I don't want to do this. And then the merit of running the playoffs seems to kind of lose its purpose if LeBron James isn't going to take part in something like this. But they haven't done that. So it does suggest that they feel like they're essential too.
I think they're essential because, you know, like everybody has mentioned, there's some trying times right now with Black Lives Matter movement, with COVID-19, that, you know, you need something else on TV to, you know, give you some sense of peace, you know, give you some sense of joy. And I'm not saying that everybody's going to use this for peace and joy. I'm just saying some people. And for me, I miss all sports, you know, from, you know, tennis, golf, basketball, baseball, football, because it takes my mind off of reality sometimes. It makes me get away and, you know, position myself in one of those players, you know, a position. And I want sports to come back on TV just for what I just said, because the entertainment factor. And for me, I have a 14-year-old son, so I can help show him what he needs to do on the basketball court, you know. And so the things that I tell him, that he will now believe me because now LeBron James is doing it, you know. So, but I think if LeBron or someone, Giannis, the, you know, the upper echelon guys would say, you know, let's just really reevaluate this thing because, you know, this matters or that matter. I think the league would be a little bit different. But like Patrick Beverly said, if King James said he's going to play, we all going to play.
Eddie, I want to go back to your example where you played at one of the all-time home field advantages, Ohio State, and then one of the worst home field advantages, Memphis, for a couple of years. And so you've had both experiences here. Let's take the example of what's going on around the country. And let's say you play in Houston now, it's the Texans, and they're letting 25%, 50% fans come back in. And then you go to a place like Baltimore, who's one of the best teams in the league, and their governor isn't allowing anybody to come in. Do you think there is some level of an unfair advantage for the teams that are in a jurisdiction that are allowed to have some people come back and play in front of them?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Without a doubt. But I think these are times that we're in and we have to make adjustments. We have to understand that everything is not going to be a fair playing field for each city, for each region, because hotspots popping up everywhere. You know, the number one thing is the health and safety of our football players, of every individual. You know, sports are second, absolutely. So I think you have to follow the proper protocol and take more precaution than caution on these situations. So if it calls for a certain area, if it's Baltimore, it's a hot spot, you're not allowing fans in, then you have to sacrifice that, at least for the next few months, this year, or however, until we get our hands wrapped around this whole situation, because COVID-19, you know, is not a political thing. It's a real deal. And people are losing their lives. And we need to really understand that. Yes, we want sports to come back, but the only way to come back is if we follow the proper protocols and take care of each other in that manner. So that's what I think.
All right, let's end on a big picture question. Optimistically, all of the leagues you're going to play, all of them are going to crown a champion. Harold, I want you to go last because baseball is such a unique position with how they're structuring their schedule and all of that stuff this year. But let's start with the NBA, since they would be the first to literally crown a champion if they can play. Is there an asterisk, Robert, for whoever wins this thing this year?
You know, I played in the 1999 season where, you know, we want to put an asterisk by the San Antonio Spurs season because it was a lockout. I think anytime you win a championship is a great accomplishment. So there shouldn't be an asterisk. It's not like like half the guys didn't try to compete and play, but everybody's out to compete and everybody has the same advantage that you have. I'm not one of these guys that believe in the asterisk. I think if you get out there and compete and you do what you're supposed to do to try to win the championship, you win that championship. You play hard as an individual. You did your thing. I know a lot of people, I guarantee you, if your team doesn't win it, you're going to say it. And if your team does win it, he goes like, oh, it's not an asterisk season. We compete like everybody else. So I think when you say asterisk, that's just bad because everybody had the same opportunity to go out and compete and win the championship. And you should have put yourself in a position to have the best advantage possible to win a championship.
Eddie, I assume since the NFL hasn't even started, and let's hope they're going to play 16 games, that you would think a Super Bowl champion, it would be legitimate?
Absolutely. We don't count the preseason games anyway. Guys don't care about it. I hope they do away with it, period. But if there are a full slate of games, you got 16 games and not one of them canceled, then yes, I think there will be considered a legitimate champion. And I'm going to go ahead and say it'll be the Kansas City Chiefs again. I just think they're I'm going to say I played golf at out in Tahoe, and Patrick Mahomes is out there. And you know the energy after you win a championship.
I hope he bought.
Huh?
I hope he was paying.
Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, $500 million, absolutely he was paying. But his character, his demeanor, very laid back, just hitting eagles and birdies, like at will, drinking beer and having a good – I'm like, God, I'm struggling on the course. I finished dead last, and I was struggling on the course. I'm like, this guy, I see why he's a champion. So I think in our league, you know, we have a full slate of games. I like the Kansas City Chiefs to be the champions this year.
All right, Harold, this is the weirdest baseball season ever. It's, we think, going to be 60 games. Everybody's got a DH. There might as well not be an American and National League. The schedules are all messed up. Is this an actual World Series champion if you get through this season?
Oh, yeah. You know, I look at it this way. It is the most competitive season ever. Look, 162 games. We already know who are going to be the top eight teams before that 162 starts. By the time they wear everybody down, we're headed to the playoffs with the normal teams. A 60-game sprint, man, that puts the worst teams in the league. That puts the Florida Marlins on a balanced opportunity as anybody else. I said Florida Marlins because, you know, that's kind of where they're. Miami at the time has been the worst, one of the worst teams. But that puts them right on the same footing as the Mets right now or the Yankees and everybody else. With 60 games, you can throw out your top three pitchers, rotate them continually, get your young talent in, and battle. And that's where the Marlins are. They're not ready yet, but they're getting there. And I think this is going to be a club that's going to take off. And they're going to help shape this 60-game stretch. And so over 162, I wouldn't be talking the same way. Over 60, I give them a shot. Because when you look at the baseball schedule, a 60-game season – you got a chance if you lose 20 games, you're still – if you lose 20 games, that's a phenomenal season. But if you lose 30 games, you still got a shot. And that's what's amazing. You can play 500 and still have a chance to be in it. And so this is the most competitive one of them all for me. And no asterisk. I think you win this 60-game sprint, you deserved it.
I could probably get 500-1 on the Marlins. Are you suggesting
you'll get it?
Win a World Series?
I don't know if they're going to win the World. Don't do that. Don't do that.
All right. Don't be competitive. All right. So, all right. Let's pick a champion. Since Eddie did it, Eddie's got the Chiefs. Harold, who do you like in this strange baseball season that's about to begin?
I really like the Astros, but I think the Dodgers are on the deepest. And they're going to benefit the most. With the designated hitter coming to the National League, the one thing you had against the Dodgers was where were all the guys going to play? Well, you just gave Jock Peterson or whoever else you decided to throw in that spot a chance to take four swings a night. That's dangerous. So I look at the Dodgers as a team to beat.
Harold, we're all going to be able to hear the trash cans if you really like the Astros this year. You're not going to be able to hide that.
Yeah, that definitely will sound. No doubt about it. Look, they're the one team.
Who's going to win the NBA title? Who do you think it's going to be this time?
I think it's going to be the Lakers, just so sort of the sense that at the end of the day, when you're playing in, with no fans, you need talent. I know the Clippers had a lot of talent, and Milwaukee has a lot of talent, but I think when you guys – players like LeBron and AD playing together, it's hard to stop that combination. And I know for a fact those two, they have the means to stay in the gym and they have the means to stay in shape and they have the means to have training so they don't lose a step. You got a lot of these teams that have young guys that don't have these facilities when during this pandemic to keep in shape and stay and keep the skills sharp. I know those guys have been keeping the skills sharp and they've been, you know, at times you hear this from me that other players have been coming over to keep their skills sharp. So I think they're still ready, and this pandemic won't slow them down. I think the Lakers will probably win it again.
All right, big thank you to our panel today. Harold Reynolds, who you can, of course, see on the MLB Network, played a number of years in the majors. Eddie George, a Heisman Trophy winner, of course, one of the greatest running backs in Houston Oilers, Tennessee Titans history, and Robert Horry, one of the most clutch shooters in the history of the NBA, a winner of 7 championships, and has the rest of them so jealous because he's got 7 rings. Thank you guys so much for joining us today. And to the fans out there, thank you for joining us for Fandemic 2020, brought to you by Bet Online.